I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, publisher of USCFootball.com, and I am joined alongside Mr. Triple-Double himself, Connor Morissette. Follow him on Twitter at C_Morissette, where you can see the triple-doubles of the letters of his name. And we have Chris Trevino, the cilantro boy. He is here. He's a helium boy, and he is dressed as, what are you, an armadillo? What are you dressed as?
Chicken hawk. I thought this was the Halloween episode, guys. So,
you look great.
So So that's where we're at. Thank you.
Tracy says, "Hi, amazing crew. Ryan, Chris, and Jack. No Jack today. We got me. I'm doing the hosting for Jack, who's still driving back from the Bay Area. But we got Connor, and we got me, and we got Chris here. And I got a guy. You guys got to see." Let's put the one shot on Chris.
Please
here
don't.
Because
yeah, there it is.
Looking so good. Yeah.
I'm only going to do that one more time. So you pick when you want me to do it again.
We have Dale says Chris is Tony the Tiger from Frosted Flakes.
Due to SAG strike, no, I'm just a normal tiger.
Okay.
A normal run-of-the-mill tiger. Not Tony the Tiger. Not Hobbs from Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite.
Not, I think of another. Someone, quick, give me another tiger. The tiger from Aladdin. Is there a tiger in Aladdin? That sounds right.
Sure.
Yeah, let's go with that.
We look great.
You do look great.
I'm sorry we didn't. So we did, Connor and I just did an interview with Eric Gentry for our House of Victory series that we've been doing interviews with the players with. They've been a lot of fun. We didn't really want to dress up for that, Chris. Plus, we all just got back from the Bay Area. So
basically, you take your job seriously is what you're saying. is what I'm hearing. But I'll be damned if I'll let the Halloween episode go without someone, at least one person dressing up.
Someone like got to send us a screenshot when Keely was on. And she went as like, what's her, peppercorn from, what was it? What's
Sandlot?
Yeah, like what's her?
Wendy
Peppercorn. Yeah, she dressed up as Wendy. That was a lot of fun. And we have a we have a super chat.
Funny super chat.
Thanks for the super chat, James. Can Chris roar?
For $9.99, you got to do it.
$9.99? You paid $10 for me to roar? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? In this economy, you're paying $10 for a roar. Oh my God. Okay, I guess.
Nice.
Wow, right. That was really good.
That's good. You know what? Do that one more time. I'm going to put the one shot on you. Do that. So just, you know, can you do it again? Very nice. We have to have that clip because that's a really good clip. I love that
this
one.
This is a very unserious show.
This is very serious show. So I'm running a not Jack. Haven't even like done all the. So we are live on YouTube, which is great, and Facebook, hopefully, and also on Twitter over at USC Football Twitter account. So you can watch us live three different places, or you can watch the replays. We appreciate that, and we will be taking live calls this evening. And we haven't mentioned the game that we are all up there covering, but live calls 512-4-TUNNEL. is the number we want to keep. We love calls. We just want to keep them short. So we can't just hear you rant. We just want to hear your question. Tell us where you're from and all that stuff, and we'll move on. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have a question in the chat on either YouTube or Facebook, put like big, bold question first, and then I'll star it and come back to it later. And as we're talking, I'll try to I'll put some stuff up here. And and James gave us another super chat. $2 this time, $1.99, he says. Yes, I did. So he did give. Now he gave $12 to hear you roar. We did it twice, so that's good. He got good value for his money.
Get this. Someone get him in touch with House of Victory. This man has money to burn.
Yeah. Speaking of, we just had a great interview, House of Victory. Go over to our YouTube channel. It's up there now. And Connor just put the content item up on the front page of USCFootball.com. So go check it out. Eric is great. He was a lot of fun to talk to. Oh, Steve says Tiger from Tiger King. Remember Tiger King? That was like maybe the greatest Netflix show of all time, just because it happened. The whole world shuts down. You can't do anything but like watch TV, and like Tiger King was there, and just like everyone got on Tiger King. So
Tiger King made you feel safe in a time of uncertainty.
Yeah. So maybe you'll be on the Tiger King, which is great. But yeah, so go check out the House of Victory interview with Eric Gentry. He was a lot of fun. I had an awesome one with Jalen Smith too on Thursday. That was the first in-person one we've done. So we both sat over at the University Village and chatted for a half hour or so. We had Eric Gentry for like 40 minutes. So that's a long one. So make sure you guys go check it out. He got in the dark there for a little bit, but then we got the lights going. That was great. So you can call in if you want to call in. We're going to talk about this game. I don't know if you guys realize, but USC actually won the game. It was 50-49. Absolute insanity. 4 turnovers. Cal was doing pretty much whatever it wanted on offense, except when they turned the ball over. USC did get a couple of fourth down stops, too. Very feast or famine. It was like big stop, turnover, or touchdown, Cal. Jay Knott, over 150 yards. He had a 61-yarder that was pretty pretty special. USC gets some big defensive plays late, including Jalen Smith. And I think I have a picture like batting away. That 2-point conversion.
Photo.
That is a great photo.
Shout out to Alfredo.
Yeah, Alfredo, good one there. Big play there. I got some video of those plays we can kind of show you guys in a little bit. Eric Gentry, who we just mentioned, had a nice one-handed interception there. That was pretty cool. But it was nuts. The fact that if you look at the numbers, Cal had 527 yards of offense. I mean, a lot of successful drives. The turnovers were 4-1. If USC doesn't get plus 3 on turnovers, they don't win this game. Just crazy to see USC kind of get out of there with a win. It starts off with a protest on the field. Halftime was the shortest halftime in the history of the world because they kicked a field goal or attempted a field goal right before the third quarter started, because it was the last play of the second half, even though the band was already playing on the field, the Cal band, not the Stanford band, which that happened 41 years ago on the same field. It was just, this was an insane game. And I'm glad I went. I wasn't going to go. I'm glad I went. It's sort of like if you go to a game and you see like an unassisted triple play or some, you know, some baseball game, like there's always some weird play. Or if you see a safety in a football game, there were some weird stuff that you're probably not going to see in many other games in this one. So I don't know where you guys want to start.
You dressed up, Chris. You get to go first.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, just a crazy game. A very bizarre game. A surreal game. And, you know, my heart goes out to USC fans, because 3 of the last 4 games have been like heart murmur-inducing games between the Arizona triple overtime, the craziness of the Utah game, and now this, a 50-49 win over Cal. To start off, you know, we do have to acknowledge it's a win. It's a huge win. It's obviously not a satisfying win in terms of how USC fans wanted this to go, because as they would say, it's freaking Cal. You know, you gave up 49 points to Cal, and you probably weren't going to get out of there unless you pulled out that incredible comeback. And credit to the players and the resiliency to fight to score, you know, 21 in the fourth, make that comeback down 2 touchdowns going to the fourth. They made an incredible, you know, run of it to walk out of Memorial Stadium with the win. So a lot of credit to them. But still, just everything we've been talking about this entire season between the defense and the tackling and the run defense, and why is Eric Gentry not playing? Oh, Eric Gentry's playing, and he's a freaking superstar when he's playing. All these things we've kind of been talking about kind of rolled into one, and USC still finds a way. Again, it is Cal. It is not a satisfying win, I'm sure, for USC fans, but enjoy the win. Are you going to get a win over the next 3 weeks? I do not know. I do not know. I still think you can beat Washington because you are at home. But other than that, it's going to be a wild 3 weeks. But credit to the team for finding a way to win on the road by 1 point.
It is one of those games where if you could go back in time and talk to your younger self and tell them USC was only going to beat Cal by 1 point way back when USC was number five, you'd probably be like, okay, they won, but that's probably not enough points. And then if you could go back maybe a couple weeks ago talking to your younger self and say USC is going to beat Cal by 1 point, but Cal's going to turn the ball over three times inside their own territory and it'll lead to three touchdowns, you'd say, well, what the heck's going on here? And that's sort of my reaction after that game. Credit to the team for getting the win, like Chris said, but man, if you're a fan, I don't know how you don't have a bad taste in your mouth. And I've been accused of being too negative, but there were so many moments in that game where I was like just shocked at some of the things that Cal was able to do and some of the things USC wasn't able to do. The first Jaden Nott big run, okay, you give up one big run, fine. The next series, pretty much, it's a longer touchdown run, and he has 100 yards in the first quarter. For whatever reason this year, the USC defense, it seems like they just keep allowing career days to guys who – the year goes on and they don't play as well. Bryson Barnes, the quarterback at Utah, did nothing against Oregon after having a big game against USC. Win's a win, but man, oh man, if you're a fan of this team who expect a little bit more, I don't think you're very happy with it.
Yeah, I think the unsatisfying win has been sort of a staple in the, USC cupboards for many a year. It's not as, like last year, not as much, but I think this year for sure, getting some of these wins, and you know, USC played two ranked teams and got blown out by one and then lost in really disappointing fashion to the other one in Utah. And, oh yeah, by the way, Utah just get absolutely curb stomped by Oregon at home for Utah. So not a good sign. But this Washington team does look beatable. I think you sort of know what USC is. And I want to get into that a little bit because the explosive plays have been a real issue. And I asked Jalen Smith about it. I asked Eric Gentry about it. You can kind of see what their answers were on our different Tunnel Vision shows that we did with them. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. I think RJ Abadia put up the point that USC has given up 55 plays this season through nine games of at least 20 yards. He said, for comparison, UCLA gave up 18 of those. There were seven of them against Cal, 20-yard plays or more. And on the stat sheet, like the stat broadcast that we use, they kind of look at big plays. And they do it a little differently. Big plays passing, gains 15 yards or more. Cal had seven of those. Rushes of 10 yards or more. Cal had six more of those. It's been a defense that has got some big stops, but is definitely giving up these big plays. And it's week after week. I think RJ said they were 130th out of 131 or something in big plays allowed. And it's not getting much better. I mean, Cal had a lot of drives and they allowed 3 points per drive for Cal. I think the drive total in this game was crazy. 18 drives for SC, 16 drives for Cal. But over 3 points per drive is a lot to give up. 49 points total. That's the most Cal's ever scored in a loss, by the way. So, I mean, there's some historic stuff going on. But what do you guys make of these big plays? Because it's, you know, Eric Gentry's like, well, each one of those big runs early on was just someone in the wrong gap. But I don't know. I mean, if one person screws up and does it always equal some huge play? Like, I'm not sure what to make of this.
It shouldn't. And all year, Ryan, it's been 10 guys instead of 11 guys, and we're not doing – one guy isn't doing what the coach wants him to do, and we're being coached up really well. But when you're allowing all these big plays, how well are you being coached up? That's my question after this game. I think the defensive coaching, you have to question it over the last couple of weeks. I mean, the Utah game, you need a stop at the end of the game to win. Doesn't happen. Against Cal, you need a stop at the end of the game to win. They stop a two-point conversion, still allow a touchdown. The defense has not been good enough these past few weeks, and people just say, yeah, we're not doing what the coaches say, and that's why the big plays happen. By people, I mean the players on the team. Well, maybe the coaches have to change their tune a little bit if this is happening time and time again. I just at a loss for words after this Cal game. 49 points is too many for a Cal team that really doesn't have many receiving threats and just isn't that talented.
What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over with the same result, expecting different results. That's what it feels like when I'm sure as a USC fan watching the defense continue to do the same thing over and over and over. To stay on the Halloween theme, they're the ultimate trick-or-treat defense. You have no idea what they're going to give you. Either they're going to give up a 80-yard touchdown drive in two plays, or they're going to give it up over 14 plays and slow cut you to death, or they're going to get a random fourth down stop, or they're going to get an incredible like interception like the one Eric Gentry made. You have no idea what this defense is going to give you. Obviously, it's football. There is, you know, it's up or down, but this defense is just so, you never know what you're going to get when they step out on the field. They're talented enough to take the ball away. They're talented enough to stop you, but they're also bad enough where they're going to just blow the game. And as you see, they almost did. At the end of the game, they allowed that touchdown, you know, to a great play by Jalen Smith. They got pressure on Mendoza. He had to force it into a place he didn't really feel comfortable forcing it. And Jalen Smith made the great play. But again, how many times have we seen where that result is different and in the end result? Or, you know, maybe they got away with a little bit of a hold there, and maybe they get the flag and they move them closer, and then they just convert it that way. That would have been equally as painful and something we all would have expected to happen and would have been like, okay, that makes sense. Or they make the stop, which they did, so they get the win. So, but yeah, it's just the ultimate trick-or-treat defense. You never know what you're going to get, a nice Reese's or a rotten egg. I do not know.
Yeah.
And Ryan, just overall, what are my thoughts on it? It's not good enough and something needs to change. I don't know what that something is, if it's the coaching, if it's playing different guys, but there's enough of a sample size now where it's a major, major problem, and it happens every week, it feels like, against these good teams.
Yeah, the chat's pretty – they have some suggestions. We got a lot of Fire Grinch things that's coming on. Lincoln Riley was asked about that or making staff changes, and all he said he's focused on Washington. I never thought he would make any sort of changes in the middle of the season. Maybe if they lost to Cal, if it was, you know, 49-42 or something, then maybe that would have happened. But I'm not really thinking that's going to be, they're going to make any kind of changes during the season. But I mean, you can't really have the things the way they're going now and keep it going. Jim in the chat says, Cal put up 40 points against Oregon State at Berkeley also. Oregon State put up 52. Yeah, like this is the thing that I sort of have an issue with, like the high watermark parts, Jim, like, when I was talking about Cal's offense before the game, I'm like, hey, against Washington, they had over 500 yards. It was like 502 yards. Against Oregon State, they put up 40 points, you know. But they didn't put up 527 yards and score 49 points. Like, that's, you know, even with turning the ball over four times, like, they still – that's a lot of points. If you turn the ball over four times and you can still score that many, that's a problem. I mean, it's the most points that – Cal's ever scored in program history when they lost the game. Jay Knott tied his career high with three touchdowns. I know he doesn't have a long career, but Fernando Mendoza, that was, you know, career high for him for rushing and passing. Like, everyone just seems to have like their best game. Cal went into the red zone five times and got five touchdowns. Like, that's, you can't do that. Like, that's just not anywhere good enough. And Lincoln Riley talked about that. There were all phases of the game that weren't working well, and sometimes the defense stepped up and saved. Yeah, they were, but I mean, the defense did make some really like quality stops and forced turnovers, but they just gave up so many points. I mean, you can't never stop a team in the red zone. Five out of five against Cal. Like, that's not gonna cut it. And it's just kind of baffling to me to see how bad they can be, but then they make these good plays that you can say, well, see, we did this that was good. But it was just so much bad stuff that was happening. And special teams were crappy too. We could talk about that too. But it's just so hard to kind of like wrap your mind around almost every team they play, like outside of Notre Dame when they got blown out, because that was offensive turnovers. They're giving up this high water mark, the career high, the never been done before moment over and over and over again. And there's only so much of that you can take and be like, how does this keep happening?
And wouldn't you hope to be better than Oregon State? And instead, they were worse. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I do think the offense doesn't help the defense a lot, too. And sometimes the defense would get a turnover in a really good position, and USC's offense would score really quick, kind of the best-case scenario, but it would just happen so fast. The defense in an offense coached by Lincoln Riley is just going to have a lot of opportunities to make mistakes. And they made some nice plays, like Chris and Ryan talked about. They had some turnovers. They made some key stops, forced some punts. But when the offense scores really fast or goes three and out quickly, the defense is going to be on the field for a long time. And the scheme, the feast or famine scheme, and just how everything's worked out so far this season, it's not a defense that's able to be out on the field for a long time and have success. Utah, they got the key stop, but then USC scores pretty quickly. USC has to get another stop defensively, and they can't do it. They might be able to get one stop, but they won't be able to get two. So I don't really know what the fix is, because of course you want to score, but all year long it's been the same theme. And I think it's a problem for Lincoln Riley's whole career. When you're so good on offense, sometimes it hurts your defense. I don't know how to change that, but we're seeing that again this year.
Yeah, they just seem to have no real kind of cohesion within, you know, both sides of the ball. Like the offense can have a really good drive and, you know, cut it to 7 points, and then you really need the defense to get a stop there, and then it all falls apart. And vice versa, they get a really good stop, they take away the ball, then you fumble it right back on back-to-back plays. You know, it's just stuff like that. Now, they were able to get some of those things working for them in this game and those in certain opportunities, and they were able to, but it's just way too inconsistent. That's the whole thing we're talking about. It's way too inconsistent. This one was glaring, but it also worked to their advantage in some points, but again, just like what you were saying, it just never feels like they're on the same page. There's never any real cohesion between both sides of the ball.
Wouldn't you rather have a defense that bend but doesn't break, or they drop like 8 every time? And yeah, they might run you for 10, 15 yards, but at least you're eating some clock. I just feel like the defense that Alex Grinch wants to have, where when it's a run play, we want it to be like blitz, and we want to force the other team to make mistakes, but that can leave us kind of vulnerable. Isn't that sort of the bad style when you have this offense? Shouldn't you want it to be a little bit of a longer time of possession? And if you get burned, it takes a while instead of these big explosive plays. I've always thought I think it's the defensive coordinator's fault a little bit for why they don't mesh really well. You know what you have with Riley, and it's tough to be a defensive coordinator with Lincoln Riley as your head coach. That's been well documented. I just don't think the feast or famine, the all or nothing sort of defensive scheme that Alex Grinch runs, is that the best partnership for a fast-paced offense that can score at will? I don't think it is.
Yeah, Eric Gentry talked, so you guys watched the interview. I mean, he talked about it was high risk, high reward, right? Like they, you know, and I mentioned, like, it seems like you guys got some quality stops. Like if you just looked at the defensive highlights, like, wow, that was a great forced fumble, interception, fourth down stop. Like they had some high quality stops. But when they didn't get the high quality stuff, it was touchdowns, you know? And he's like, yeah, I mean, he understood it too. But it was more about like the risk reward thing, where it's a high risk defense. You know, there's some complexities to it. And you're right. I think you have to consider, is this really what's best for this team, the way it's constructed? Because it just seems like, okay, one guy didn't do his run fit correctly, and it turns into a 61-yard touchdown. Like you have to have someone else kind of stepping up. They're like, okay, there's fail safes involved. There's backups. I used to, back in the day, I was an engineer. We were designing computer chips for satellites. Like if something fails, you have to have like a backup up there, because you can't go up and fix it in the satellite. You have backup plans, and it just seems like something fails and the whole play is dead and you give up a touchdown, and you can't expect, you know, 18 to 22-year-old kids to just never make a mistake. Someone's got to be there to pick it up, you know? And it just seems like that's the case over and over again. One person makes a mistake and it's like death. It's just touchdown and there's nothing else in between.
Speaking of highlights, quick plug. I did post the field level highlights from Saturday's game. So if you want to watch the game again from a new perspective, they're up on YouTube right now. And they're fun. I got some good stuff. So just a quick plug of the field level highlights.
Unlike the Notre Dame game where there just like was nothing, like there's great highlights in this for the defensive side too, right? Like,
yeah, there were some good plays.
Yeah.
Some energy. I got a great shot of the punt fumble that they caused. You know, there was some good stuff. Eric Gentry featured a lot in this one. So, yeah.
Great weekend for Eric Gentry, and I can't be the only one. Why the heck hasn't he been playing more? I thought at the beginning of the year when we did the most important Trojans, we had Mason Cobb really high and Eric Gentry really high. It seemed like everyone sort of thought, okay, those are going to be the pillars of the linebacking core, and whoever fills in behind them, maybe they can push for playing time, or maybe they'll just be reserves, but those are the two guys. And it took until this game for Gentry to really be one of the guys. He's had some other moments where he's had a good amount of snaps, but he started alongside Shane Lee and Mason Cobb, and he was in there with Gentry. I thought those two were the best linebackers, and I just don't know why that wasn't the combination from the get-go.
Was it the Arizona game where he played and he graded out really, really well, and then we did not see him
for
the Notre Dame game?
I think so.
He just like disappeared.
Played two snaps against
Notre
Dame.
Played two snaps after grading out as the number one linebacker against Arizona. And then nothing. I don't know what he did against Utah, but he starts against California. And obviously you see the impact that 18 has, the angry giraffe with those 7-foot arms and just all over the place. He's knocking people down. He's getting his hands up. I think he had 2 batted passes. He tipped one that was almost picked off by Mason Cobb. He had an interception. He is helping in coverage on that side of the field on the 2-point conversion. Mendoza can't go to the tight end because he's being swallowed up by Eric Gentry, maybe a little bit of a hole, but he can't throw. He can't throw it to the easy tight end there. He's got to go over the top, make the difficult throw to the back of the end zone, which is a play Jalen Smith can make. So he was all over the place, and this is the kind of impact player we thought he would be. That's why we put him so high on our most important Trojans.
Did you so we were talking to him about, we asked him about the angry giraffe nickname. Did you give him that nickname?
I didn't give him that nickname.
Okay, we thought it might have been you.
We gave you credit.
No, not
me. Do you know where it came from?
I don't know where it came from, but it's not me.
He wasn't sure either. He liked it. He said, if the fans did, I don't mind it. And I'm like, I think it might have been Chris. It sounds like a Chris thing.
No, it does sound like a Chris thing, and I am dressed like a tiger, but I did not give him that nickname. All I did not want to take credit.
Okay. We talked about the defense a lot. We did have a comment from Marquise. Man, hold the offense to the same standard because they had been pedestrian, or should I say trash as well. We thought they could score at will, but they can't. Again, they've had some bright spots. I really like the fact one of my 3 keys of the game was, and I don't even know how I pulled this number out of my butt, like 25 carries for running backs. I think Jack or RJ or someone might have suggested that. Which I don't think they've been close to that this year. And they got 26. Now, it was pretty slow going early on. Marshawn Lloyd ended up getting a couple of bigger carries later that really helped his average. He got over 100 yards. But they were dedicated to running the ball, similar to what they were doing against Notre Dame, where they didn't have the success. They had, you know, not great success, but they kept running the ball against Cal. And then they eventually broke through and had some big runs. A couple touchdowns for Lloyd. Touchdown for Austin Jones. They did run the ball, and I thought that was good. But it was, you know, they had 4 three and outs, I think. We just never saw this team get like that kind of the amount of three and outs that they're getting right now. But, yeah, I mean, we got to talk about the offense too because, you know, they scored 50, but it was helped by 4 turnovers from Cal in this one.
Yeah, I think 20 points off turnovers. So, yeah, they got a lot of help with short field and stuff. And, yeah, they haven't looked right in several weeks. They just seemed – very, I don't know what the word is, like
out of sync.
It feels like it takes a lot of effort. You know, we've seen this offense where it looks effortlessly, where they're just moving at will, and it's not like that. It's like almost like pulling teeth sometimes, and it's just, I don't know what it is. I'm not an offensive genius like Lincoln Riley. I cannot tell like what exactly, you know. It probably goes down to the offensive line, wide receivers being out of sync, you know, the wide receivers outside of, you know, Taj Washington really has had 2 really good games back to back, but just hasn't had someone consistently to step up alongside Taj. I know Brendan Rice scored a touchdown. I know Kyron Hudson scored that really nice catch over the shoulder, but it's just like outside of him, they haven't had really anyone be as consistent as Taj.
I think the tape is out on him a little bit, and there's been an established blueprint, not how to stop them, but how to slow them down. And I think a lot of people are doing that, and USC, they're adjusting, but it's taking them a little bit to punch back because they were so good last year, and Lincoln Riley has been so good doing this kind of offense for so long. Now Caleb Williams, he's back for his second season at USC, third in college. There's just a lot of film on him, and he might be a little banged up. Offensive line isn't very good, so there's a bunch of reasons. But at the end of the day, 50 points, even though it wasn't perfect, 50 points is really, really good. Against Utah, 32 points. That should be enough to beat Utah. The Notre Dame game, the offense was terrible. Arizona, they had some issues starting down 17-0, but eventually getting to 43 points in the double overtimes. I just think the problems are on defense, and they're so much worse than they are on offense. Of course, there are issues on offense, and we don't want to just forget about them, and people in the chat are right to bring them up. But man, oh man, the defense, I think, it's just that's what leads me every week to just kind of scratch my head, like, what is going on here? And if the defense was better, I think the team would be a hell of a lot better.
I think they press sometimes as well just because they feel the pressure of a defense that – I think I called it a pressure cycle when I tweeted it out. It's just the defense isn't playing well, so then the offense feels like, oh, the weight is on our shoulders to move the ball and score every time because other than, if we don't, we're going to lose and we're going to go down. And that's what happens. So then you press more and the defense gets more anxious and then it just – this whole thing. So I think a little bit also is just feeling the pressure to score, and obviously that – that manifests itself in mistakes and not executing and things like that.
And Lincoln Riley's talked so much about we kind of haven't had fun winning. And that makes me, what you just said, Chris, think of that. Like Caleb Williams, it's fun when they're scoring, but when they're not scoring, he gets frustrated. And the whole team, it's sort of frustrating and not fun is the vibe that I get from the team a lot. And I don't really know how that changes unless the defense plays better, because you can afford to punt or make a mistake if the other side of the ball is bailing you up. But when you have to be perfect and you're not perfect, that's of course not very fun.
Kristen on Facebook in the chat says, pass plays are not set up by the run game. No outlet receivers against the rush.
I thought you were reading a question from my real girlfriend.
Oh.
And I was very confused for a second.
Different. I don't think this is your girlfriend Facebook.
Yes. Let's assume
maybe
that.
I did have dinner with her last night, so
that was a factual statement. That's not a burn. It's not a burn. I was also
Chris was there.
I was also there. So let's everyone settle down. Everyone settle down and get back to answering this Kristen's question about the pass not setting up the run. Is that what it was?
Yeah, but I thought that they did a better job of it in this game, just being able to establish the run, and I think it opened up some things. There was some good play action, which I think Caleb was really good at the play action. I don't think they've been very good at the screen game, which is, you know, that's kind of concerning. But when they were, even when they weren't having success with the run, they kept trying to run the ball. They were handing the ball off to running backs, and then they had some play action pass stuff that worked. I think it really helped having the run game, but that's not been the MO of this team most of the games.
They definitely trusted the run game a little bit more than we've seen in the past several weeks. And to your point, look how well the pass was set up by Cal's rushing attack. They were murdering them in the first quarter, and they were getting whatever they wanted in the pass game. That's how it works in a cohesive manner. So that I think Ryan pointed that out during the game. Like, look how Cal's run game is affecting their pass game. They're so wide open, and they're making plays down all in the first half.
Play action is really important, and I think Lincoln Riley learned a lesson from the Utah game, how important it is to run the ball, and I'm sure he knew it. And, you know, he's not learning anything new, but I think if he could go back in time, he probably would have run the ball a little bit more against Utah, and you saw that against Cal.
Yeah. We had a couple super chats again. Thank you very much. This one's from Matt, and here I think with a little transitive property stuff going on.
Okay.
Stanford played well versus Washington. Number 24,000 versus number 5. Yeah, Stanford's pretty bad.
They've not very good, but they've definitely gotten better.
Yeah. I mean, they played better in the second half against USC, but remember, USC destroyed Stanford, and they should have probably beat Washington. They were really close against Arizona, who's very good. They played some way better games after USC just curb-stomped them. But, you know, more recent history, USC loses to Utah, and then they get curb stomped by Oregon. So, I mean, you can play like the game, but USC played a really good first half against Stanford, and they've played pretty well since a lot of different places. But thank you for that one, Matt.
Ryan and I watched that fourth down call or play in the Stanford game where he just dropped it.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. It was. Yeah, they'd fourth the and two. They ran a trick play. And it's like, oh, you're gonna have like some receiver throw the ball, and it. I mean, it was there.
But it worked, is what I'm saying. He just.
I mean, it didn't work.
It should have worked.
In paper,
it worked. He was wide open. He just dropped the easiest pass of his life.
I have seen a lot of people say Washington's beatable. Washington's beatable, and they.
I just said it. Yeah.
They are, but. I mean, those receivers are nasty. Who's going to stop them on defense? Well, their receivers are
amazing.
They didn't
score an offensive touchdown against Arizona State. Penix didn't throw a touchdown against Arizona on the road.
What's going to happen against USC?
But we've seen them be – they're not like – so that's the problem. It's when USC's bad, everyone's a world beater. Like, everyone's just going to kill USC. I'm like, USC has a chance without all these teams, but the way they're playing, it's not great, you know. But Washington's been, you know playing with their food for the last few weeks, you know? So it's not like...
They've looked human.
Very human. Like, and USC can do that. And USC could get blown out. They could play well. James had a super chat. Caleb seems frustrated early and often. Are there locker room issues?
I don't think there's locker room issues. I just think, obviously, the season isn't going based on what the expectations were for the year. You know, they're 7-2. They're out of the college football playoff. That was... kind of, you know, the main goal for this team is to make a run. Obviously, Caleb, last year in this famous Heisman speech, you know, I'm up here, but you guys get to play in the college football playoff. That's where he wanted to be, and he's not going to be there. And so I'm not saying there's locker room issues. I just think that the expectations and the mood has changed with that locker room because they know they're not going to the big dance, if you will. You know, they still have hope for a Pac-12 championship, obviously, but they have to realign their expectations of what the season was supposed to be, which can be hard. You know, obviously you go in thinking one thing, and then you know reality hits you in the face, and you don't get that opportunity anymore. And especially you know for Caleb trying to make one final run at USC,
frustration is definitely the biggest part of it. But also he's just so under the microscope, and I feel like everything he does is scrutinized, and people have opinions about. Every little thing he does, from his nails to his performances to just him maybe rolling his eyes every now and then. And I don't know, in fact, if that has anything to do with it, but how can that not, when you're just so under the microscope and everything you do, people talk about every little detail. That's got to be kind of tiring. And I'm sure he gets frustrated by that too.
Could you imagine, you know, some random fan running up on you after you had a bad incident and trying to get a selfie with you?
Good like, for him how's for that showing restraint.
How's that incident, bro?
Yeah.
What did you make of, so Caleb Williams, this was really weird. After the game, we only got Lincoln Riley. We only got him for three questions to start. I got to get the first one in, and he gave me a really long answer about the whole.
He's figured out how to do these press conferences, long-winded answers, and that filibuster.
It's the Grinch method.
Yeah,
yeah, but
they're even shorter. With
only three questions, which was a little frustrating. But I mean, I get it. He's coming. He was sick. Like maybe you don't keep him out that long. Yeah. And you want to ask, like someone asked him like how he's feeling. He's like, thanks for asking. I was like, wait, we would have, but we're just not going to get much time with you, so we have to really ask questions about this team. Then they brought out all the players like in a. Like a huge group that they were all standing up and we're all sitting down. And Eric Church was like, hey, we're the players. Why are we standing up? Like, I don't know. They set this up. We would much rather you sit down around the room. We could talk to you individually. But Caleb Williams,
your SID. It's not us.
Yeah. We did set this up. So we got players, but it was just all at once instead of being able to ask. So it's tough. You get a couple questions for each guy. Caleb Williams's answer, former student of Chris, by the way, it was kind of defensive almost.
Like
defending himself about, you know, I had 70% completions and blah, blah. You know, there was a bunch of stuff. I'm like, you don't need to defend yourself. Like, you're the reigning and Heisman Trophy winner. You know, it's like, you're good. Everyone knows. But I think there's questions about his pinky or whatever. And, but that was a little weird to me because, you know, Lincoln Riley's kind of acted embattled a little bit this year, even when they were undefeated. And, that kind of gave me like a feeling of embattlement for Caleb Williams too, like needing to defend, you know, his track record, which I don't think he needs to do. But any kind of thoughts on that? His answer,
I'm going out a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
It's because he's hearing the noise, I think. And imagine if everyone for a whole year says you're going to be the number one pick, you're going to be the number one pick. You hit some adversity, and now it's like, oh, is he going to be the number one pick? Like, I'd defend myself too, and I think that certainly is part of it because now. Notre Dame, that was 3 games ago, and he's still saying, I've only had one bad game in college. I don't know if that's the best thing for him to be saying, but he is saying it, and he just keeps doubling down on that. I've only had one bad game. I've only had one bad game. I think the stuff is in his head a little bit, and I don't think he needs to be like, that's not a bad thing. It's so hard to deal with all that stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine the pressure of someone in that, under that microscope, and you know, in a sport like college football, yeah, where it's like all on you and the quarterback. You know, like Ryan, what did Matt Leinart have to deal with if he had a bad game? It's like a couple of newspaper articles. Now, if you have a bad game, you have to deal with
you
blogs,
suck, you stink, Twitter,
yeah, TikTok, memes about you,
your guys running on the field,
you're trending on social media after like one bad play. They're making fun of you for your nails. They're just all these things coming at you. It's really, I know they can say they can tune it all out or whatever, but there's just so much. It's hard to, you can't tune out everything. You just can't unless you get rid of your phone and don't have internet access.
You know what Eric Gentry said, Chris? He deletes Twitter like for the game weekend and then puts it back on, so he doesn't hear any of the stuff on social media.
That's a good strategy. It explains why sometimes I can't find his Twitter.
Yeah,
I'll look for him and he's not there. So
he deletes it.
A good strategy, but still, even if you do that, there's still other things. Does he delete TikTok? Is he on TikTok?
I don't know.
Does he have Instagram? I don't know. There's so many things that where they can get you and seep in your head, and you know, just kind of throw you off your game.
Matt Leinart. So he kind of transcended the sport too, because I remember, I mean, I've told the story before. You know, it's probably 2005. So you know, he's dating like one of the girls from the Hills or something like that. Kristen Cavallari. I don't know, something like whatever. He's like like this woman comes all dressed up from People magazine, comes to practice, and she's like, is Matt Leinart here? Like, she had no idea what anything was going on. Like, that was a whole different world. Like, that's – college football was never that big. And, like, him and Reggie sort of became this big thing. Caleb Williams, and now with NIL, people are taking it to another level. Like, I was at the Laker game the other night. He was, you know, sitting courtside and gets dapped up by Kevin Durant and is sitting next to the Suns owner. You know, he's on all these national TV commercials. Like, there's a lot. I mean, you get a lot more benefits too, but there's going to be the more of that, the more pressure, the more rumors about him wanting to own a damn NFL team and stuff, like stupid stuff like that. Because there's, as a college athlete now, you can be like a professional. And that just wasn't the case for most of the whole history of college football.
Noise is a, I don't know, what's going on here?
Here, let me unplug you for a second. Yeah. Go ahead.
He was saying the noise.
Louder.
There we
but
go.
But not from me.
There you go.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's just the noise is just so much more intense and louder. And I don't envy him being in that position. I, of course, would love to be a guy who makes a lot of money playing a sport. That sounds amazing. But all the other stuff that comes with it, that is really hard to deal with.
Yeah. We had a super chat from Matt
Leinart.
Matt Leinart?
It wasn't Matt Leinart. No. It's funny. He tweeted something like a get your popcorn, or he was like a popcorn meme or something. And everyone on the boards was just like,
what does this mean?
What does this mean? I mean, I asked him and he said it was something to do with like Brady Quinn. It wasn't anything to do with him. So USC fans were like, wah, wah. That's always the case. Like on the message boards, we love them. The people are like, there's always like conspiracy theories. There's always something crazy going on. And when you come in with like, when they're like, oh, I think this means this, or that means they're going to get this recruited because they said this. And then you go on and you're like, no, I asked them and it's not that, it's this. And they're just like, they much rather would have the hope that it's like this crazy thing. Like instead of like you telling them, no, here's what the facts are. And that's not it's a fun theory, but that's not true.
You can never be vague on Twitter. I could go right now, tweet like a Christmas tree, an eyeball emoji, and then just walk away and I would destroy you. Watch the world burn. I'll do it.
Matt says, how about the protest delays to start the game for 15 minutes? It was only 7 minutes. We talked to Eric about that too, and he had mentioned to the security guards, like, aren't you guys going to do your job or something? And I saw Cooper Lovelace talking to a security guard. I couldn't read his lips from where I was, but I'm like, he is definitely telling them to go move those guys. You were on the field, Chris. What was that like?
Bizarre. I still want to know how they got on the field. Like, where did they come from?
It was like after the coin flip.
They just did the coin flip, and then
they bought tickets and just ran on. No one stopped them.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Okay, I did not see that because I was like getting ready, my camera ready, and then I look up and it's like, okay, why are these people sitting? Then I saw all the photographers rushing to the field. I was like, oh, this is Cal Berkeley. This is a protest. It's my first Cal Berkeley protest. So I ran over there and started getting some photos of what was going on. I thought, I didn't know what it was. Apparently it was for a professor. They're protesting the suspension or firing of a professor.
Suspended for stalking a student.
No, another professor.
Oh, I thought it was a student.
It was a fellow professor. Yeah. So someone
fake news by me.
That's okay. Yeah. No, I tweeted, I was binoculars. I'm like, it said justice for, and I couldn't read. And I think it was Yvonne.
Yeah.
And then someone replied to my tweet. It's justice for Yvonne. And they sent me the article. And it doesn't look good. The article was not very flattering for the professor because she keyed like this other professor's car, like threatened the other professor's like mom. There was a lot of stuff that she keyed the mom and threatened the car. No, there was a lot of stuff, and she admitted to the stuff, but then said she needed like help. And I just it was like if you just read the article, you're like, okay, this is not. It said sexually harassing a student, but I think it was a professor. The article I read was a fellow professor.
Maybe it was on top of that. Maybe
if it was a student, maybe. It's even worse. But I thought the article I read was for a professor. Maybe there was something else there too, but it wasn't anything like national news. It was or international news. This was
it
like
seemed
this.
Like something very small to protest.
Right.
I thought it was going to be something bigger, like housing or. You know, what's going on in the Middle East, but no, it's a professor that keyed someone's car.
And it was, the article I'm looking at was against a professor here. We don't have to spend a ton of time on
this. No.
Let's spend 20 minutes on this. Take a call about this specifically.
We could, we should take a call though. Because we got our friend.
Dave from Iowa.
You know, he's on there. Let's pull him up. Mr. David from the great state of Iowa. You're on Total Vision. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. What's up? So, Ryan, you called Cal terrible last week. So, since USC beat them by 1 point, what does that make USC? And another question. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but all these defensive-minded head coaches really know how to, handle the defense, and then the offense is pretty good. Why is it kind of the opposite for Lincoln Riley and USC?
Thanks, Dave, for the question. Did we get that? Okay. Cool. Thank you for that. Okay. So here's Cal's record. 1-4 in conference, 3-5 overall. They beat North Texas. They lost to Auburn. They beat Idaho. And they beat Arizona State by 3. But they lost all the other ones. They don't, Idaho's not good. North Texas not good. This is not a very good team. I told you they have a good offense and they have a pretty bad defense. And that's sort of where you are. But yeah, USC beat them by 1, but that's transitive. We're not doing transitive property stuff around here.
To the second part of the call, Dan Weber wrote this great story. I guess if you go back through the last 25 college football national champions, all but 4 of them had defensive-minded head coaches. It is pretty hard to win at the highest level with an offensive-minded guy. It's even harder to win with an offensive-minded guy who calls the plays. I think the last one to do that is Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. It does not happen very often where a head coach who calls the offensive plays wins a national title. I think it's certainly fair to talk about that, and it's a great question by Dave right there. Why, if the offense is so good or the defense is bad for a lot of these teams, look at a Lane Kiffin coach team where some of the defenses aren't very good, but his offenses are usually pretty good. I don't have an answer for that, but it's certainly a good question, and it makes you kind of wonder, would USC be better off with a defensive-minded coach? Maybe. I can't believe I just went that far. I believe in Riley, he's going to do a nice job in the long run. But, I mean, the track record and the history is the history. Defensive guys have more success at the highest level.
Oscar says Chip has an elite defense. They do have a really good defense.
Yeah, they have a damn good first-year coordinator who they kind of got lucky on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't really know why that is. Maybe it's just this mentality of like, I'm gonna outscore you, it doesn't matter, I could just put in whatever defense I want and doesn't matter because I'm gonna put up 55-60 points every time, and if you score 40 or 30 doesn't matter because I scored more than you. Maybe that's the mentality. I don't know.
I think it is, but is that a recipe for winning at the highest level? I think pretty clearly that's a no.
But no one will admit that.
Yeah.
No one will admit
that. This is coming up a lot, and I need to get you guys' thoughts on this. Paul says, then why the heck did Mike Bone spend $110 million for Riley? Okay, first, we don't know how much he spent.
And his record is impeccable.
Right. Because his resume is top five in the country as far as coaches go. So USC was in the shitter. And then you go get a top five coach who has a very impressive resume at a very young age.
He wins 83% of his games. That is so good.
Yes. And the money thing needs to stop because you don't know how much he makes. There's no public, no one's reported officially. They put people through some numbers out there. It's probably in the $10 million a year range. It's not your money. Who cares? Like, that's the going rate for a great coach. That's just what it is. You have to pay something like that to get a really good coach. And you pulled a really good coach from a blue blood program. And that hadn't happened in 30 years. So I don't want to hear any more about he makes too much money. He's not paid enough for what he brings to the table. Just winning the Heisman Trophy is worth how much for USC. So it's not your money. Who gives a crap how much money he's making? But you're paying him that money because he's got an amazing resume for a 40-year-old coach. Yeah, the aspirations are to win national championships, but you had to crawl up out of the – I mean, you dug yourself such a deep hole. You were in the abyss with all the Clay Helton years, and you climb out of it in year one and win 11 games. Now, they got a lot of work to do to kind of get back to that, and that's a little frustrating to not go from – to go from a step down from year one to year two. But you hired that guy because he's got a great resume, and that's why.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is no one going to compliment Dave from Iowa for keeping it quick?
He's done an excellent job lately.
Nice job, Dave.
He's taking the coaching, is what you're saying?
And the last thing on Lincoln Riley, he just raises your floor so high, winning double-digit games every year, not losing to teams, even though they almost did to Cal, who you shouldn't lose against. Their only losses have been against ranked teams. People get mad at the bowl game last year. I get it, but at least Tulane was ranked. He just raised your floor so much. People are so upset about the untrained eye comment and the defense being bad. What you have to hope for is that, as a lot of good coaches do, he adapts going forward. And you might not be able to see it right now because the defense hasn't been good, and Riley says a lot of very similar things after a lot of these games. But I believe that he will see something based on this season that warrants change. He has to make some changes to what he's doing, because even his track record's good, but he hasn't had success at the highest level, and I think he's going to change.
I wish you luck. I wish you luck.
Beck says Saban won a natty in 2 years. Okay. One, he's the greatest coach in the history of college football. So you want to compare Lincoln Riley to him. Two, he won it in 2 years at Alabama after already coaching at Michigan State and LSU, where he won championship. So, I mean, this is not – that's apples and oranges for sure. And you're also comparing him to the greatest of all time. So if you're going to say, oh, I really like the Miami Dolphins coach. What's the nerdy guy's looking name? What's his name again? It's like
– McDaniel.
Yeah. I'm going to compare him to Bill Belichick, who, you know, got fired early on in his career and then, you know, rattled off six Super Bowls or whatever it was. That's who you're comparing him to? And you're just like, after he's been at a couple blue bloods already, and then he goes to Alabama and goes on this most amazing run. He's done more at 40 years old than Nick Saban has at 40 years old, if you want to do that comparison. How's that?
How do you like that?
How do you like them apples?
How do you like them oranges?
Do you not think he's going to change, Chris?
You know, I won't pretend to like know inside the mind of a high-level coach who has their own ego. I mean, at that level, you have to have this ego where, you know, to a certain extent, you have to be steadfast and believe in what you're doing, go on that path. You can't second guess yourself. I know it's hard to like accept if something's not working. I mean, do I think at the end of the year that they're going to make a change? I would say it's like 60-40% right now. 60-40%, because I think they're going to get slaughtered in Eugene.
Yeah.
I think that, because like if Oregon puts up 70 points, like if they put up.
Jeez, Chris.
Points.
Well, Dan Lanning is going to not take his foot off the gas.
He is not. He is not putting on kid gloves for that game. He is going to do whatever he can to Mortal Kombat finish USC in that stadium in Austin. He's going to do whatever he can. I don't care if that defense is giving up play after play. He's going to keep going so they go play after play after play. And he is going to do his best to embarrass USC. And if that happens, you have to figure it's going to shatter this disillusion that this your Alex Grinch is the person. Something has to – the breaking point has to be reached. Have we reached the breaking point yet? I don't know. I think we're close, but I don't think it's been reached yet. And I think it's going to take something like that. Not that I'm saying I want USC to get slaughtered in Autzen, but you have to see what's coming. You have to see what's on the horizon. Look what they did to Utah, a team that, you know, beat USC at home.
I mean, I would like to make sure you read Chris's ghost notes after the game. Because you see the stuff on Twitter, right? I mean, we're in the chat. Fire Grinch, blah, blah, all the stuff, right? Happens at our message boards. I mean, there are literally people yelling it to the players, to the coaches. Like, it's not like they don't hear it. Like, they know
I was going to say, there was a guy, like, not hammered, but he was, like, aggressively violent about the fact that if he got on the field, he was going to, like, attack Grinch, it felt like. That was a USC fan.
That's not good.
Like, that's how angry he was. Again, he was drunk. Probably wouldn't have done anything. Probably would have got in his face like a drunk guy would. But there's, like, actual, like, pure anger and hatred from USC fans that I see in the stands, you know, yelling things down at these coaches. So, like, I hear it. I hear it all. Like, I understand you're mad and you're angry. But above all, remember, these are human beings. And I wrote about this after the Tulane game, you know, you thought, okay, that's it. That's the last straw. You're going to see a change. And I know everyone was...
You thought there was going to be a change after Tulane?
Yeah, I did. I did think for a glimpse there was, and then Riley kind of shut that down in the presser. But I remember how, like, that was like the bottom falling out, that Tulane, that drive, that end, that collapse, all of it on the defense. And then I remember standing in the tunnel, and Alex Grinch was there, and then his family came over. And you remember, oh, he's not just this person that everyone wants to, like, sacrifice, but, like, he's a dad, he's a husband, his wife came over, his kids, everyone was sad. You know, you remember when the game is over that they're, you know, a human being, there's a person under that. And I know, you know, it's college football. He says it all the time. That's the nature of the game. You feel the pressure. You take the results with it. So I don't know what I'm really saying. The point is, I'm just saying, like, there's so much hatred right now that I see. But above all, just remember it is a game. This is, you know, you never want to see anyone fired or never want to call for someone's job. But just remember at the end of the day, it is just a game. There's bigger things going on. I know you're a fan, but just try to keep that perspective is all I'm saying.
Public service message.
A guy dressed like a tiger.
Exactly. But I would say they know it. And Lincoln Riley is not going to, when he was asked about it after the game, about making staff changes or anything, he's like, I'm focused on beating Washington. Like, that's where their focus is. My honest opinion is that he's going to change after the season. I really feel like that's the most likely thing. The fact that he's not throwing anybody under the bus right now or making changes now, I know people are like, well, that means he's never going to make a change. I don't think so. I think he knows the temperature of what's going on around him. And it's hard. It's definitely difficult. He made the decision to bring everybody back, and it wasn't a popular decision. And, you know, sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. This one has not worked out. They're bad. And I guess it kind of leads to the question here from Kevin from YouTube. Is it fair to say the defense is worse than the 2022 team? I don't think it's worse because I think they do better stuff, but they're still giving up a lot of huge plays. It's getting there, but I still think 2022 was worse. What do you guys think?
Better, but not close to being better enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Shotgun and I were asked a kind of a similar question on Helium Boys podcast. Who would win, last year's team or this year's team in a head-to-head matchup?
Last year's team would win.
Yeah, last year's team would win.
But it's just like a better team.
Yeah, it's a better team, and they have the better defensive player in Tuli Tuipulotu. And that, I think, is like the difference. They have a better offensive line.
I think the 2023 team's more talented.
Yes.
But the 2022 team was better. And that's hard for fans to understand, too, because...
That's hard for me to understand.
Yeah.
why do you think that is?
Yeah. I mean,
that shouldn't be the, you know what I mean?
Every offseason when people are talking about what they're, and it's harder to project now because of the transfer portal, but you're like, how many players are coming back? And sometimes you lose the whole offensive line that was terrible and you're better with a bunch of freshmen playing the next year. Like, it's, you know, the team, it's going to be greater. The whole is going to be greater than the sum of its parts, but we look at the parts. You're like, okay, well, they got these good linebackers and they got, okay, these good safeties and this good rush end, and you can look at a collection of talent. If you're playing a video game, that's fine, but this isn't a video game. You have to get all these guys to play together. There's a lot that goes into this, so I feel like 2023, more talented USC team. 2022, it's a better team, and there's just a lot that goes into making a good team than if you were putting a Madden grade on every player, it's going to be a higher group than last year, but it didn't make the team. But like, you can't really simulate it in the video game. That's a better team. You got better players, you're going to have a better team. In real life, though, I don't think that's the case.
And that's what makes fans so frustrated. I think they feel, and I feel the same way, that the team should be better. And for whatever reason, it does look like in a few areas they have taken small steps back. And defensively, maybe they have taken a small step forward, but you needed to take a big step forward.
Yeah.
Don't count out, back to the original topic of, like, will they make a change? Don't count out the scapegoat theory where you fire multiple coaches and not the actual DC, like Helton did in 2018, where he kept Clancy and everyone thought Clancy was going to get fired, but they just fired like a bunch of people under him.
Yeah.
If Grinch comes back, though, after what's happened these last 2 weeks, I guess if USC wins the Pac-12 championship, okay, I get it. But if things continue this way, I just feel like, forget it. forget yeah. what happens in the future. The damage, the nail should be in the coffin based off of Utah in last week. Those are two performances where it's like, okay, there's been enough time. The new players have come in. What do you got? And you have a loss to Utah and a last-second field goal where you couldn't get a stop, and a Cal game where you got off the field at the very end, but 49 points, and Cal had a chance to win despite making a lot of mistakes on offense, too. I don't know. I just – if I was a fan, I'd be like, okay, why am I going to invest my time when I know what's going to happen because there's been so much evidence that it hasn't been good enough. It's not going to change. Something needs to change, I think. So we'll see.
Speaking of
– I wish you luck, man.
Thanks.
Dave says, national media – I don't know who that person is. Has USC losing final three to finish 7-5? Do you agree?
I don't think they lose final three.
Yeah, I don't think.
Jack and I said 2-2 on Thursday.
Yeah,
so
I think they win
right
at least
now.
One of the next three. I think they have a shot of beating Washington for sure. We've seen them be vulnerable. But there's not a consensus that the national media is all thinking USC is going to be 7-5. But a bunch of people do. And you know, for good reason. They just haven't played very well. So. Let's go to Bobby Q. I like the play on words there. I was at the Cal game, so we were all there too. Was my perception off? It just seemed that USC's defensive guys aren't just not big enough. Thoughts? What do you think about the size of USC's defense?
I think that's part of it, and that's been an issue with run defense, and I think you saw it especially without Barry Alexander. I do think that's a part of the problem for sure, especially on the interior of that defensive line.
Yeah, I think they're definitely small in some spots. Obviously, Stanley Tauafu and Tyrone Tilney aren't the biggest guys out there. I don't understand why Jack Sullivan doesn't get more run. He's a big guy. He's a Big Ten guy. But obviously, he has not fallen into favor with the defensive staff, and they still want to play Tauafu and Stanley. No knock on them, but they are smaller guys, so it is they're more susceptible to getting, you know, kind of a run blocked into big plays for whatever offense they're going in. So yeah, I think they're definitely bigger than last year, but they are still small in some spots.
Just want to thank everybody. I think we have like 400 people live on YouTube, and I don't think we have any Oklahoma fans in there right now, so that was
I wonder why.
Yeah, and if there are any, first of all, thanks for watching. If you're not like spamming our chat, you're probably a sensible Oklahoma fan. That was a tough loss. Wishing you the best of luck going forward. But you have a great team. It's been 2 years. I would like focus on your team, and it's a great team. They're they got one loss there, so it's not too bad. We do have a call.
Oh,
yeah. Let's see. Caller, you are on Tunnel Vision. Can you hear me? And what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Mark from Arizona.
Hey, Mark.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, my question is, I've been a fan and a person that's been there for 60 years watching USC. I've been down there at the tunnel. I've been everything. And the thing that bothers me a little bit is the media thing with 30 minutes of practice. That's never been the norm at USC. Every coach that we've had has always wanted the media to be there. Because that's who markets our people. That's who markets swimming. That's who markets everything. Because they see USC on TV. They see it. They hear it on the radio. And I don't get that. The other part is the defensive coordinator. It's a problem. We know it. But the real big question I have is, do you think the AD is going to – she's new, I know it, but do you think she's going to come on board and say, hey, Lincoln, we need to discuss something? I'd like you guys' thoughts.
Well, thanks, Mark. Arizona, right?
Thanks a lot, Ron.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. Yeah, we would love to see the practices more open. Over the years, it kind of started with like the Cody Kessler kind of years for whatever reason. He was never crushed in the media, but man, he blocked a lot of us, and he's come back and apologized and everything. It's just like sort of the way he dealt with things. He didn't do the Eric Gentry delete Twitter. He like blocked a lot of people. Like, I don't know if I ever said anything bad about him on Twitter and I was blocked, and like Keeley was blocked, like all these people were blocked. And it sort of changed a little bit. Usually the quarterbacks were on board. We could watch the summer workouts and everything. And that kind of changed then. the more embattled Clay Helton got, the more restrictive things got. And then sometimes we couldn't watch, and then we could watch portions. And Lincoln Riley was someone, you know, coming from Oklahoma where media wasn't allowed to watch very much, or, you know, and so that's sort of kind of where that is coming from. This is the most restrictive it's been, but to be fair, like, the whole college football is trending that way too. It's not just Lincoln Riley, I guess, but it's, you know, we would love to be out there and be able to, because if we could say, hey, Eric Gentry's been just crushing it in practice and he didn't play in the Notre Dame game, then that's one thing. You know, we used to be able to say stuff like that. I mean, we would tell you,
Sam Darnold's kind of,
yeah, Sam Darnold's like on the scout team, like crushing people, and you're like, oh, so he's probably gonna be good when he gets in. But we can't do that kind of stuff really anymore.
It's a Lincoln Riley policy and doesn't help us do our jobs. People don't like to hear the media complain about media access. After I complained about how no players talked the other game, and that was funny. How about Lincoln Riley the other day? Oh, well, today we'll let you talk to players, kind of like giving us a reward. I don't know. That was kind of weird. He said that before leaving from his press conference. So here I am complaining after saying I didn't want to do that. But I wish practice was open too. It's definitely annoying.
Mark, I wish we got 30 minutes.
Yeah, we don't even. We get what, 10?
I get
8?
A minute and 30 seconds, probably. No. However long warm-ups are now, it's probably like less than 6 to 7 minutes. I'm going to time it one day just to get the real effect of how long we get, because it's literally just the team warm-up, and they don't even let us finish the team warm-up. We're out before the even team warm-up ends. And a bonus note, not related to any of his questions, but Mark sounds super young. He said 60 years as like a fan.
Yeah.
I guess that means he's like 60 plus, but I thought it was like a 30-year-old man or something. So credit to your young-sounding voice, Mark.
Yes.
What was the second part?
I have it right here. I wrote it down because I would always forget.
I always do.
He asked, would Jen Cohen push Lincoln Riley to make a change? Everything I've heard is that she has guts and she will get in there and try to do something if she thinks that there's an issue with the football team. She hired Jimmy Lake, and then when it was apparent that he wasn't the man for the job, she fired him, even though he was her guy. I just think, like, she might be able to push, but who's really in charge? Is she in charge, or is Lincoln Riley in charge? And if a change isn't made, I think we'll know who has the final say, at least right now. That could change in the future, but that's a fascinating part of it, I think, for the offseason.
Yeah, I would say Lincoln Riley's in charge of what's going on. Jen Cohen just got there. Do I think she's going to walk into Lincoln Riley's office? I mean, she knows what the temperature is. He does, too. I don't think there's anything. She's not going to, like, go in there and say, you need to fire this guy. Like, I don't see that happening. I think she's someone that can make bold moves. But you just came into the situation, like, literally, she's weeks in. You know, it's not that much, a couple of months. It's just not a lot. And I think she's got to understand what everything that's going on. I know she's hearing from fans, and she's an, you know, open person. And you get it. I think it's all things that'll be discussed. But if you're thinking that there's going to be some moment that Jen Cohen's like, Lincoln, you need to come into my office, shut the door, and here's what we're going to do. I think Lincoln Riley's going to be on. I think he would be agreeable. Like, if they don't win the Pac-12 championship this year, then you got to make some changes. So, but I wouldn't expect that it's like 2 months into the job, Jen Cohen's going to start pushing him around or something. I don't think that's the case. My opinion, but
we shall see.
Let's see. We got one from Dave Rice. Is Caleb dealing with a finger issue on his throwing hand?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, he's dealing with a pinky. He says it doesn't bother him. I'm sure it bothers him a little more than he leads
on. Ripping the ball, Connor.
Yeah,
still ripping the ball.
On that fumble that he recovered, looked like he hit it on one of the helmets of a Cal player. I think it's something worth monitoring, but obviously he's still able to play, and it's just more of a nuisance is what Lincoln Riley said a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. This is another one from Beck. Besides the defensive coordinator change, any other changes you see that need to be made?
Well, are they referring to, I guess, just anything?
I think anything. I mean,
maybe a special teams coordinator.
I don't know if you necessarily need a special teams. You need more oversight of special teams. If it's a full time, I don't care what it is, but you have to change whatever, whoever, however it's being run, someone needs to be in charge of special teams. And if it's some low-level analyst that doesn't have the opportunity to tell a bunch of assistant coaches that are full-time what to do, then that's not the right way to do it. You need someone overseeing this whole thing, because it just looks like no one's running the, it's just like, it's just going off. It's a runaway train, and just bad things happen over and over again. And you need someone at the top to say, this has to stop. And we're going to pull this guy from this practice period into this one, because we need work on special teams. Something like that. Because I just don't, my guess, we don't get to watch. My guess is that's not happening right now.
So just make one of the, like, you talking about give someone double duty, like an assistant coach? Like,
I think someone needs to be running it. And it's probably better to have it a full-time assistant that maybe has other things. But if you, Lincoln Riley talked about, he's got guys that have special teams, you know, experience. Well, instead of, you know, Luke Heward, like, working with the punt return guys or whatever he's doing, and like, make him in charge of all of it. You know, like, you run the whole thing. So you're telling these guys what to do when you're running these periods. Some oversight from someone that has actual authority, not an analyst. It would be my suggestion.
I think Jim Harbaugh's son, Jay, does that at Michigan. He's the safeties coach and the special teams coordinator. So he's the guy who is in charge and will answer for it if there's a special teams problem, whereas now Lincoln Riley answers for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luke Heard, you're the second wide receivers coach. Let's add a little more to your plate. Let's give you the special teams.
It's funny. See him. He walks around the field before the game.
He does. I thought it was crazy. It was like Groundhog's Day. I was standing in the corner. He walked by me like three times.
Yeah, he does laps or something. And it was funny, from the press box, I saw somebody walking, and I just watched too much stuff, I guess. And I couldn't see who it was, but by his gait, I'm like, that's Luke Heward. And I put my binoculars up. Oh, it was. Yeah, I don't know. That's just his thing. He just like walks around the field. We got one for you, Chris.
Oh, no.
S.E. Neal. Why does Chris have a Whataburger logo on his forehead? It does look kind of like that.
Are you going to give the one shot?
Oh, yeah. Let me give you the one shot. Okay. Hold on.
Let me hold still. I didn't really get a close look at whatever design my real girlfriend put on my forehead, but I do like Whataburger, so I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I know a lot of California people probably won't be. I don't know why I say California like that. California won't like it, but you know, that's just what it is. That's just what it is. If you're seeing Whataburger and the lines on my forehead, then so be it.
Nice.
So be it.
Well, great stuff, guys. Run so much smoother without Jack. You know, I can go off the rails. No, I'm just kidding. We miss Jack. He'll be back for our – we got a Thursday show, right?
Yep.
Who's doing that one? Probably you, me, and Jack?
I think so.
Connor, Ryan, and Jack will do that. Shamrock Boys. It's reunion weekend. It is my 30th reunion for undergrad.
Woo!
At USC, which is crazy.
Give me the zero. The 30. Are we backwards?
Backwards, yeah. So there you go. Or you could just switch. Nice.
too much effort on our part.
But I hope you guys can.
Says the man dressed like a tiger.
Go check it out. Yeah. So there's a bunch of events going on down there. So yeah, we'll do the show Thursday night, and it should be a fun weekend. I mean, who the heck knows? You know, they're this close to beating Utah. And then they just beat Cal by this much. I mean, it'd be a different story if they were still undefeated in Pac-12 play, even not having played well. But this is a game, if you beat Washington by one, just be happy with it. You know, if it's 50-49 and USC wins this one, just like Cal, that was a top 10 team. So you take it all day long. But we'll still hear all the complaints and stuff. But you get the win. We'll see. If USC does, now it's a whole different story, because you could, you know, go on the road and lose to Oregon and then maybe beat UCLA and still be in the Pac-12 championship game, depends, you know, how things play out. So it should be a really interesting finish to the season. And I don't know. We'll see how it goes. You guys have any like final thoughts, words of wisdom from Tony the Tiger?
Legally, we're not Tony the Tiger.
Okay.
I don't have any like overarching. I did want a quick shout out to long snapper Jack Casasante, because he deserves some credit for forcing that fumble as well. He was first on the scene, stopped the guy's momentum, kind of whips him around and disorients him, and then Tackett Curtis comes and punches loose. So just need to get the long snapper some love.
Yeah.
And he's always kind of first down there in those punt returns. You know, he's doing his job, getting down there and causing some havoc, and he did. So I just wanted to give him a little love. I have a great shot of it in my field level highlights where he's in there. You can see clearly that, you know, he is contributing to helping that that huge fumble come into play. Teamwork makes the dream work. So shout out to him.
On that theme, Taj Washington took some big hits, got up every time. What a special player he is.
Also, we did not hype up Marshawn Lloyd enough. Big game for him.
Yep. He was huge. Yeah.
Just having that game. You know, I know he had a 100-yard game early in the year, but this is kind of the one where he kind of took over. You know, 72 yards receiving, 115 on the ground, two touchdowns. Just coming back off that performance against Utah where he fumbled, critical fumble. And just, yeah, put the team on his back sometimes and, you know, kept cranking away with that run game and busted that big one to set up the – I believe that one set up the game winner or the game tying. But either way, just a huge night from number zero.
We had a lot of people, like, guaranteeing USC is going to finish 6-6, like, after the Utah loss. Now we have a bunch of people saying they think they're going to beat Washington. So, that's good. At least trending in the right direction. And we have one last super chat.
Is it James?
No, Mr. Andrew.
Okay.
I believe Bear made a difference in the second half. He was suspended in the first half because of the targeting. He did. You are correct.
Massive difference.
I'm just a little tiger, but yeah, those bears, those bears get it done. Lions, tigers, and bears.
Yeah.
And a giraffe helped out in that one.
That is true. And then I'll put this one last one up. Paul says, and I can't disagree, Utah loss is unforgivable.
Yep.
You're right.
Great comment, because it's true.
It is true. That was a game you just cannot lose, and they did. But you know what? There's still more games. So you have to move on at some point. I told Oklahoma fans to kind of move on. You have to move on. You still have an amazing opportunity because you're playing great teams. That was a game that the USC shouldn't have lost, and they did. You have to answer for that. And I think that's part of the reason why you're going to see a change, you know, some changes at the end, if they don't win the Pac-12 championship game, just in my opinion. But thank you for that one. And thanks. We had one more from Kevin. We had another super chat. People just getting in their last super chats. Oh, wait, that was the wrong one. Let me pull that up. He says, a 7-Eleven cashier can throw for 100 yards against USC.
I think it was Lowe's, but...
It didn't pull up again. I'm sorry.
The funniest peristyle thread that I've seen in a while, when USC had let up those two long touchdown runs, the header was, where did the protesters go? And then in the body, we need them. They could stop Cal right now.
They did slow down the scoring.
If whoever wrote that is listening, thank you. That made me really chuckle.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. I know we had a whole bunch of people on YouTube. I'm sure other people on Facebook and Twitter as well. So thanks so much for tuning into our little show. We will be back Sunday night. Shotgun will be in town. Yeah. So Shotgun will be doing Tunnel Vision. I'm not sure what the lineup will be. We'll figure it out. You're out. Yeah. Connor's out. So it'll probably be me, Shotgun, and Jack for that one. But we love getting Chris. Do you want to pose for the screenshot? Like, what would you like to do?
How about
the one shot?
You're just doing me as the soul. Yeah, you should probably be. It's not going to be a three-man. It's just going
to
be.
No, I think it's just you. Because
I don't deserve to be in.
That's really good. I think that's our screenshot right there.
Can I do one of mauling Connor?
Yeah, you want to do that? All right, we'll pick one. It's harder when you're moving, though, because you have to, like, pose for the screenshot.
Take three.
Perfect. I love that. If you're listening on the podcast version, sorry, but that's just what we're doing. That's going to wrap things up. We got Triple Double. We got Helium Boy, Cilantro Boy, and me, your little old host.
Boss Boy.
Hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.